Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft.
Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. English 115F, Fall 2007, Vanderbilt University. Professor Jay Clayton, Professor Matthew Jed Hall. Visit our class blog at worldsofwordcraft.wordpress.com.
We'll sort out the logistics, but we are going to be compressed on time. This is our last day together. I know Will's had a little technical problem there. We are replete with technical problems throughout this discussion. I think many of us have overcome those. What I want to talk to you today is what was on the syllabus. Who had an opportunity to read Gaming as Culture, the article in there about the Linux self? Raise your hand, please. Who read the article?
Was that about
Tuesday? That was Tuesday of this week. Raise it up. I read it, so. So about 75% of you read the assignment. Who wants to volunteer to give me this? The name of the assignment is called The Role-Playing Game and the Game of Role-Playing, Ludic Self in Everyday Life. And it's a discussion about identity within the context of our gaming experience. For the benefit of those participants who do not have the wonderful opportunity to avail themselves of the text, who would like to summarize, and then editorialize, summarize the article. Mr. Cohen.
All right. Essentially, he discussed D&D as in role-playing. There's like three things you have to deal with in D&D: person, persona, and player. And like the player is a person outside the game who knows all the die information. The person's your outside self, like you go to school, you're a teacher, you're a lawyer, all that stuff. And then the persona is the person you're playing, as in role-playing, like interacting with other people. And there's got to be some kind of barrier between each, or it's not role-playing, but there's also some kind of connection between each of them. There's no way to entirely separate yourself. And so it's like bad form to use outside knowledge when playing D&D and things like that. So it's just creating your own identity that's still connected to your real identity.
I think that very nicely captures the essence. Who else has some comments on summarizing this? Wes, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Maybe we want to play D&D. It sounds like fun. I'm going to escape, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I have an urge. It was kind of funny. But I had a conversation with Peter, and he thought it was an inaccurate representation of D&D games as a whole. But it took extreme and used that to his point. Now, I think someone like me who's reading that wouldn't be able to understand that. I didn't think that was kind of, that was very fair. But, as you know, as a simplified, to make his point, he had to simplify it and had to take the very essence of what it was, which made sense to me. And making those literally, I don't think words, but using the concepts, I think.
Peter, you want to articulate what you spoke of at lunch and try to, but give it to the context, give some broader context for the people who didn't have an opportunity to read the article.
Well, he's talking about a group of gamers who come from completely different social circles and different jobs. They don't really know each other. And they come together, and there's like a guy who's the DM who is wearing a McDonald's shirt. And he talks about how they don't ask him if he works at McDonald's. They don't call him by his real name. They call him the Dungeon Master. He calls them by their character names. They make a point not to discuss their outside lives. They make a point not to ask each other's names. It's all about the game. And I've played in a few different kinds of things, usually just with my friends, but I've played with people from my church. I've played with just random guys at a game day at a college community center or whatever. And never have I had an experience even close to that. Even if you don't know anyone, if there's, you know, if they're wearing a funny shirt and you can make a quick joke about it, or in between games, you'd be like, "So where are you from?" They're like, "Oh, I grew up from South Carolina." And then, you know, you just talk about what they do, no matter who they are. You always, you know, he said things like, you say "you" to imply their character instead of them, and that does happen. You know, what do you do? But that's just sort of for efficiency. He's trying to say that people split off their lives. You know, your work life is completely separate from your house life, which is completely separate from your Dungeons & Dragons character life. And I thought that was incorrect. I think they all intermesh.
Well, I think that's sort of I got the point that they, at the end of the way he summarized the article was they really can't be separated effectively.
Yeah, but I don't think we always try to separate them so completely.
The other point, you know, that I wanted to come out through exploring this is who is the most uber intensive MMO player in this group, do you think?
Professor.
Professor Clayton?
Yeah.
Aside from those of us in an instructional or pedagogical role, which of our students here in the class?
Depends what game.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in any game, any genre, any field, no FPS, I'm talking about in the MMO space, are someone really absorbed in a particular title right now? Jonathan, you're a big WoW player.
Yeah.
So are you the most uberist?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the most uber, but I'm up there. So
you're up there. Are you real? What's your character's name in WoW?
Dux.
So we have consistency in the Jonathan every time.
He buys fake gold with real gold, too.
That's
all I'm hearing. Oh, no. Oh, man.
It's ugly. Game over. And there goes 10 points off his grade.
So it's to his point, you can't separate real life from that game. What? Do you really identify with Docs in the context of World of Warcraft? I mean, how do you, we're talking about these, did you read the article or not?
No, not really.
Okay, so knowing what these other guys said, how do you identify with Docs?
I mean, Docs is a part of me. I mean, I spent so much time building them up.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, I feel like it's part of me. Like, I think everything's intermeshed.
And you agree with that, Matt?
I guess.
Seth, jump in there.
Yeah, well, I've played a good bit. Like, all my characters, I don't...
You're really, a WoW guy too, right?
Yes, sir. Like, I play for gameplay. It's about zero story for me. Like, I play because it's fun to kill stuff. You know, like, I have... Like, my characters, even though I spend plenty of time with them...
We're a narrative course.
I mean,
we call this emergent narrative, by the way.
Well, even though I spend a lot of time with the characters, I don't identify with them. Like, I feel they're my own, but, like, I don't give them traits.
Don't you remember your first time creating it? Don't you remember? I mean,
yeah, I made a warrior and I hated him.
Did you kill him?
Yeah, I deleted him. Yeah, I did. But then I brought him back, and he's awesome now. But,
wow.
There's no narrative whatsoever when it's just for gameplay. Like, I play Final Fantasy VII for the story. I'm replaying that game right now, and I'm playing that for the story because it's just so amazing. Yeah,
but I heard you WoW players use a particular term called endgame. Describe in the MMO context what an I want to make some key distinctions between a D&D space, which I don't think, based upon the last survey, you know, D&D is going to be a theme underlying this because our Neverwinter Nights 2 is based upon those game rules and mechanics. The D&D experience is much different than a WoW experience. So what describe to me WoW players in particular, what is an end game? I would suggest you reboot, Chris. What is the end game within WoW? What does that mean when you guys talk about that?
End game is when you hit level 70, the highest level, and then it's like a whole different game. Like, you can like build your character with like the best gear in the game, or you can PvP and get higher honor. So there's two parts of end game. PvP and PvE.
This is because you hit a ceiling on your level cap, and level cap is for all intents and purposes. I'm helping me understand this.
Instead of leveling, like there are certain factions and groups with which you become, you build reputation.
Tell the group too.
With reputation, you pay less from vendors. You can buy new things. They're like the best gear and the best stuff to craft. You have to have like an exalted reputation, which takes hours of grinding and doing quests for, and it's. It's completely different. I've never been 70, so I mean, I played my friend's 70s, but cause I don't play that much.
You got 70? 70? So you got two 70s in
there? 60s.
370s, so you're just really high. So you're coming up against level cap. The end game, really, it's kind of a misnomer, isn't it?
I mean, end game is like less about leveling up and more about everything else. So it's like,
is leveling up the actual game?
More
until
about
you
grinding
hit 70.
Your eyes out.
Because once you hit 70, it's like all about everything else.
Well, it's a shift from solo play to group play. That's what I think it is. Like, I'm not a big fan of set level 70. I level there and kind of stop playing them. But like, with leveling, you rarely level with a group. And once you hit 70, you never do anything by yourself. Your group for a dungeon, an instance, or you're PvPing with 40 other people, 80 other people. Like, it's just a shift in mentality.
Do you have an emotional investment in your character? What's your character's name?
Zether.
Zether?
My first Zether.
Your first love?
No, like, it's Zether kind of comes from Seth.
Is there any emotional investment?
None.
Is it
I would feel horrible if he was deleted because that's so much time, but it's just because of the time I put in. Not because I feel close to the character.
What about you, Docs?
I mean, I have three characters. Docs with an X, Docs with two X's, and Docs for a female. I mean,
oh my god.
Docs is a part of me, okay?
More so there's your feminine side.
Remember your split personalities.
The subtitle of this is The Ludic Self in Everyday Life. I mean, we're talking about identity within gaming. I mean, Peter was discussing the McDonald's issue. The McDonald's guy is a dungeon master. And I agree with Peter. I said, this is the group that they describe seems like a very idiosyncratic group of individuals. Right? I mean, it's not... I don't think they're typical. We go in, we talk. So the guys that I used to game with, we play football first. We do pick up football, then we go play D&D later tonight. That, you know, you knew about each other. It wasn't this. We come in, we assume the role. We leave our university professor and McDonald's chicken nugget master role behind us, and we then do the game, and there's a sharing of identity. In Jonathan's case, for the MMO space, Docs is very meaningful.
Yeah, and plus all my friends are mine. I know what they do. I mean, I have a friend that works at McDonald's, for real. I also have a friend that goes to Harvard. I mean, I got a lot of friends all around the world. And I know what they do, like, in our IRL.
But do you really?
IRL for the benefit of everybody else?
I mean, do you really think that kid goes to Harvard?
I swear to God, he does.
But okay, but on that point, let's talk about it. If it weren't for your WoW experience with Docs, would there have any circumstances you could think of, reasonable circumstance, where you would have... formed a common basis for interaction with these people?
I mean, through the game. I mean, without the game, I don't think we'd even meet. I mean.
And do you not have a similar experience when you read books? Have you ever been reading a book and someone asked you about it that you otherwise never would have talked about? Can you think of a time? I've got an example of a time I did that. Can you think of a time? You do, Peter?
Yeah. I mean, for everything, too. You always have these experiences and you realize, you know, someone, you know, went to a foreign country that you went to, or, you know, they just got done visiting your home state or something, like, oh, I'm born there. And it doesn't even matter really what it is, as long as there's some sort of connection, it really just sort of sparks off conversation.
Now, this article is very important to me, and I'd say because it ties this up, it ties this idea up. So the game, quote, this should sound familiar based upon other things we've been trying to emphasizing the course. The game is not competitive.
Page number.
Has no time, sir.
Page number for us.
Apologies. It's page number 20 under social reality, the bottom paragraph. It says, the paragraph starts with fantasy role-playing games or leisure activities that entail a unique form of play. The game is not competitive, has no time limits, has no scorekeeping, and aside from the death of a player's persona, has no finite definitions of winning or losing. Have you heard this concept before? I mean, we should have. I mean, it's been something that we talked to Jesper Juul and all the mechanics of gaming and Zimmerman. So how do those definitions differ in this D&D space from the MMO space? I mean, these are key things that all of these very, very bright academics say illustrate role-playing games. You've got Seth's school of thought that says, I'm really divorced from Zether, mm-hmm. emotionally divorced from Zether, and Jonathan, on the other hand, was really emotionally invested in Docs. They're sharing the same space, the same world context, the same narrative framework, and the same game mechanics.
I think it's just a different mindset for different people. Maybe I'm taking it like a too simple of a level, but I think it's just different people have different like ways of seeing the game, and I don't know what I'm saying.
I think you are. I mean, it's different strokes for different folks in another way, right? It's the way you come at it. I think Peter's issue in this article is that this author's contention on page 22, that top paragraph, couple sentences down, carefully that these games are carefully isolated from the rest of life. Are these games really isolating you from the rest of the world? Has any of the gaming elements in your life been integrated into your real life? I mean, Jonathan knows people from Harvard now that he otherwise wouldn't have. I mean, the technology helps. There's quotes going on over there.
Harvard.
Hobbit, I'm not from Boston.
He cardboard box in the streets of Manhattan.
So just your identity, it doesn't sound like what you... compose yourself. So your identity in the game, it sounds like I want to, if I can take the two schools, the Doc school and the Seth school, how many people are of the Seth mindset? No real connection to their MMO space. They just play it for the game mechanics. Raise your hand. 3, 4, 5, 6. And on Jonathan's court, anybody? There, I'm voting up with that.
I'll back him.
Can I be halfway?
Yeah, between anybody indifferent or in between or just up here?
In between's different for me.
Maybe this is a little bit different, but for everyone who just said they feel a connection to their character, when you play Monopoly, if you have the hat, do you feel a connection to that? I know it's like very different, but it's still playing
games.
The shoe? Iron.
Like
the
iron. Yeah,
no. I will do that. They always choose the same piece every time.
Fair enough.
You always choose the same piece every single time. So they have to have some, they feel some kind of connection to that piece. Most people usually choose the same piece every time. So they obviously feel some kind of connection to that piece, whether it's the hat or the shoe.
So the
hat
or the shoe.
Or the dog.
But I don't
know.
So that's a really interesting question about that. That's an interesting question. Do you think they choose it because it's their good luck piece and it has a kind of superstition, or do you think there's a kind of however abstractly that piece has a iconic or symbolic relationship to their identity?
I don't think there's much of a difference between the two, because if you think the piece is your good luck piece, then you're going to start to like that piece more than the other pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
The
reason I pick up on this, let me just show my hand here, is I'm trying to think about what this discussion, how this discussion impinges on our ideas of character in imaginary worlds. You know, so you can identify with a character. Is there some kind of other connection with a choo-choo train for a Monopoly board piece or whatever, you know, whatever you is your lucky piece? Is that the same kind of structure as character identification?
Well, it's not the exact same, because the character, there's only so much you can do with a Monopoly piece.
Right.
Whereas a character in a game, you lead through the story and or you play with them for a long time or whatever it is. Whereas the piece is just, you know, and it's just a piece of metal. But at the same time, since you are playing, there's still similarities because you're still playing a game with the same piece, and the piece is just a character in the real world. So I don't know. I guess it all comes back to how much you like put into it. Like, I guess some people get really attached to their Monopoly pieces. So.
Seth, tell us one more time. Person,
persona, player,
and player. Those are the key attributes that this author says are really important to have a role-playing game. Monopoly, you're not playing the role of a choo-choo train, are you? Yeah. I mean, that choo-choo train is your projection into the game space.
Your venture,
right? That's the boundary occurred. Your representation. Your person is still Seth. Your persona in Monopoly would be
the iron.
In Jeff's case, would be the iron.
Like the iron.
The iron. Little player.
Couldn't you play the iron?
Couldn't your
nothing else?
Couldn't it be like the person buying all the properties? Like a real estate broker maybe.
If your imagination carries you in that direction, I think it's really, you look at those games we talked about, it's really a rules-based game. It's die roll and chance, and it's a game of probability right there. I think the thing that we wanted to explore here within this context, do these role-playing games, and I've seen a 50-50 split on this, because this is end game for me as it relates to discussion of this course. Are these role-playing games just an extent that we're calling role-playing games in the vernacular? I want you to read you something here in a moment, but I'm trying to determine, are they really role-playing games? I've experienced D&D, Peter, what did you guys call it, your old group?
Collaborative novel.
A collaborative novel. I don't disagree with that entirely.
It's a joke.
It's a joke, but it's tongue-in-cheek, but the reason why it's a joke is because there is an element of truth to it, because you are creating a new story together in an imaginative space that isn't bounded by these normal spatial rules of a Monopoly. But I'm trying to get a sense of this group is how many have that feeling as Docs has that they're in the story, they've lived an adventure, and that, you know, if you do Lord of the Rings Online, you're feeling that sympathetically as an extension of that Tolkien space. Or if it's just really Seth, the way I hear it, you telling me in 50% of the group, and I want you to correct me if I'm wrong, it's really about game mechanics, probability. It's not, you're not necessarily immersed in the world of Azeroth. Mm-hmm. Is that?
If it looked different, it had different strengths. It had the same game plan and had just as much fun.
I can't really hear you, brother.
I would have just as much fun if it looked different, had different characters, different story, but same game.
So if it were dudes with lasers instead of orcs with axes?
Sure.
It's the same. Are you Horde or Alliance?
I'm Horde.
Oh, of course you are.
Of course
you
are.
FTW.
Right. Alliance for me.
Peter, jump in there.
I just feel like MMOs are too easy not to have, like, the connection. Like, with Counter-Strike, when you get on, you're not the character. It's about honing your skills and being the best at shooting someone. But MMOs, I feel like...
Is that a test of skill?
What? Yeah, I think it's a test of... I don't think MMOs are that much of a test of skill. At least in... I haven't experienced WoW, so I know it's a different thing. I know
no
PvP...
skill in WoW. Don't
PvP, is, PvP is much bigger in WoW than it is in LOTRO.
That's the only thing I can see.
There's a lot of skill in WoW.
It's a lot of skill.
But I've found LOTRO to be a lot more about running around and sort of enjoying yourself rather than trying to be the top. And if you're trying to be the top, it would just be through, you know, making more money or something. Yeah.
There's no end game. There's no winners and losers in LOTRO.
I mean, I'm sure there's someone out there, but
in my experience,
I haven't really perceived one. Yes.
I think that's a fair distinction.
Jonathan, where were you going? You better jump in.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of skill involved in WoW, especially endgame. Like, there's some bosses you can't, like, only certain guilds can take down. Like, new guilds, they can't take down some specific bosses. And also in PvP, the better team always wins, whether it's Horde or Alliance.
Seth made a good point under his breath when you said that about skill.
Well, I was just saying, skill in WoW is knowledge-based, not button-mashing. It's like, I know every skill that every class can ever do, so I know how to counter it, how to prepare for it. So it's not who can press the 3 button faster.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because one of the basis of this article for the... help me again, guys. How many of you have actually played a D&D session? I know a very small number of us have, so Greg, Matt, Peter, myself, and Michael. One of the things that we're always... If you have a real hardcore group of D&D players, they're talking about out-of-character knowledge. The example they gave in this article was something akin to what Seth said. If you know from the Monster Manual that goblins have X amount of hit points, and that you project that knowledge into the fantasy role-playing imaginary space, you're sort of cheating yourself, because that persona would not be invested with that knowledge. You're using out-of-character knowledge. This is where, and by the way, you see this, if you have an OOC channel, it's a derivative of those mechanics, out-of-character / OOC in the chat channels. You may have seen this in some MMORPGs. You're projecting knowledge about the mechanics of the system onto the fantasy world. That's a big no-no in a fantasy role-playing game or D20 type role-playing environment, because you're supposed to stay in character. It's what you were talking about earlier. So you believe that it's not so much skill, but it's knowledge of those game mechanics. What do you people in WoW use? ThoughtBot?
Or Wiki?
And is that acceptable and appropriate to bring that knowledge to bear and not?
There are mods that insert encyclopedias into the game for you to use.
So in MMOs, by contrast, we see outside knowledge beneficial as a good thing. What do you think about that, Professor? We've been walked through many a quest. Does that detract from the narrative?
I don't think so. I think that the knowledge, the thing I took away from Seth's comment was a little different from the point you're making, which is that, you know, that if you define a skill in shooter game as just being able to press the button rapidly and accurately, then that's one kind of more mechanical skill. Whereas in PvP combat and MMOs primarily, it's all about knowledge, complete familiarity with what all your opponents can do. And so you have a kind of encyclopedic knowledge of the world. I don't think that's OOC. Because you've built up, you know, in association with that character, those knowledges. Well, I mean, it could go either way, because if you then are leveling a number, a level 20 character, that character shouldn't have the knowledges you've built up on your level 70.
Yeah, I think both things could be, you know, viable arguments, just because you could say the way in which you get that information and that knowledge is really what affects it. If you go onto a website and read, this is how you kill this guy, mm-hmm. then it's a little bit less real than if you mm-hmm. battle it three times and you gain the wisdom through the failure of your actions how to beat it, you know?
Well, I think different people want different things from games. If I want to have fun playing like a quest, then I won't look it up and I'll just have the adventure. But if I want to do the quest for a certain thing, like maybe I'm tweaking something for PvP, I'm using strategy to get good gear and be good in the PvP, but I don't want to have to go through this whole adventure to do this other thing I'm trying to do.
That mob is a means to a different end in that case, right?
Right.
You're using it to get the loot to enhance your PvP in general. Let me, on that note, let me read this to you. This is this concept on page 30 that he refers to as metagaming. And, he says, a player may know the hit points of an ogre because you as a player just read the monster manual and are transferring that knowledge to your character. The dungeon master plans a game based on what the characters know. And this is his person versus persona idea. So it can ruin the game. If a character doesn't know a monster has invulnerability against fire, he might just bring fire-based weapons instead of something else. And this goes to, I think, Craig's point. You do short-circuit a learning and in game, you know, narrative gameplay experience for the sake of winning in the rules. And I think Seth's point is, at that point it becomes, you could be playing physical rock, scissors, paper with people with just a greater degree of variance as to what the combination is. You really think that if it didn't have that wrapper and that fantasy environment and those graphics that you would enjoy the mechanical resolution? I mean, at the end of the day, it's a bunch of die rolls happening in randomization. And the computer.
Would I enjoy it as much?
Think about Microsoft Excel, win, lose, based upon you setting variables to a certain level.
See, if I'm just looking at numbers, it's obviously not as enjoyable. Of course, like running around and wow, it's fun to do that, but it's more environment rather than social.
So, where I'm going to go to try to finish this up and Professor Clayton can help me here. I'm going to make an assertion that MMORPGs, and I think maybe you can offer a counterpoint to this, MMORPGs are not the best medium for narrative expression. I mean, there is emergent narrative that occurs in video games. You can tell me the story of how you developed your character. Docs, on the other hand, can probably tell me the story of the character in the context of the war of Alliance versus Horde, I would imagine. You'd have that capability to your Horde or Alliance?
I have both.
You have both? Which do you prefer?
Horde.
I mean, like
Alliance or 12-year-olds?
Yeah, Alliance
or 12-year-olds.
Play Alliance or Namezor.
So I don't think MMORPGs are, at this point in time, the best platform for narrative expression, because at all the ones that I've seen today, the mechanics underneath are the same, and I want to extract that the rule base are you grind, you level, you get loot, and at an abstract layer, you can take that out and put that into any single game, and there's nothing that really carries the story forward because those mechanics constrain the way in which the story unfolds. Grind, level, move to the next level. Does anybody disagree or want to comment on that? Or Professor Clayton, you want to offer a counterpoint with that conclusion?
Well, I think that is it's a fascinating concept that the mechanics determine the potential for narrative.
Right.
For narrative pleasure and for character identification. That's surely true of every medium. It's surely true. I mean, do you think it's true about a novel? Let me have everybody's attention for this part of the discussion here. Do you think that's as true as of a novel? That somehow the mechanics of novel construction do set limits to your imaginative identification and your ability to have narrative pleasure in the novel?
Yeah.
How so?
I mean, if the novel says something happens, you know, I mean, you could imagine that it doesn't, but you can't very well just sort of... You can imagine what it looks like when J.K. Rowling says, you know, Harry Potter flicks his wand and sparks come out. But the fact that he flicked his wand and stuff happened because of it, you can't like, go back on that. Like, the book is telling you.
Well, go ahead and answer that.
I disagree, because I think that a novel is basically, like, the barest bones. Like, you could break a game down into, like, lines of code and stuff, but it's hard to break a novel down into anything further. I think, like, out of all, like, the popular mediums, I think novels allow the most free reign for your imagination. Whereas, like, movies, if you watch a movie, then what you're seeing on the screen is what's happening. You really can't... You can imagine maybe what's going on off-screen or what the implications are of what's happening. But a novel, you have to do all that, plus imagine the main action.
Yeah, Peter's saying with video games, you can change what they do, but you can't change how they look. And books, you can change... how they look, but you can't change what they do.
He's also saying that you can't omit the fact that Harry Potter sparked up a wand.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that everything, I mean, unless you're just taking free-reign imagination, I mean, I guess you could argue that even free-range animation, imagination has limits, but every sort of structure will limit something, but it will also give you something.
That's a very good observation. In fact, the limiting forces in every media are called conventions. A novel has a set of conventions. A novel has to have a beginning, middle, and end. It usually has to have a main character, a protagonist. It usually has to have some kind of frustrating character or obstacle to overcome. It usually has to have a crisis or climax followed by a denouement and a resolution. That is the game mechanics of a novel. Now, and so the question, Professor Hall has just given you a very negative account of the game mechanics of all games, which is level your character, grind, level, just say it again, level your character.
You grind, you level, you go to the next. Narrative element, grind level, next. Those narrative elements will not be available to you unless you go through certain mechanical process, and that constrains a narrative, unlike a movie or a book. You can't get to Angmar in Lord of the Rings without going through certain game mechanic hurdles. Do you not agree with that?
No, of course I agree with that. But the point I want to make is that a novel has in its conventions a similar set of limits. They're just perhaps much more open and flexible, you know, and harder to recognize, because the limits in MMOs are programmed in there. And unfortunately, the programmers are still, perhaps because they're commercially driven, they're still using the same sets of limits for every game. You know, you buy a new MMO, you're in that space, and a little bit after you're in there, you decide, well, this is just like WoW. How many of you all said that when you played LOTRO?
I did.
I just kept comparing it to WoW and liking WoW better, mostly because of the reason I play WoW is the social.
Right.
The social scene and all the people that I interact with. I don't enjoy playing through the narrative part of it.
The people you interacted with in Vicarious Universe just weren't interesting enough.
I didn't know them IRL.
Well, I think what's important about the conventions, you know, the convention that I mentioned earlier is that you've got no time limits. You know, Professor Clayton mentions beginning, middles, and end. Now, that's the MMO space, and I think they're constrained by that. So there's the conventions of the MMO, is you do level, you move up, a new area is exposed to you with whatever narrative content to which you want to avail yourself. The fantasy role-playing game in the D&D sense, the conventions we already mentioned, is it's not competitive, has no time limits, no beginning and end. It's based upon, the constraints are based upon the imagination and interaction of the people in the collaborative narrative. Now, this is the transition over to what we're talking about for our end project here. all these things we've learned in those worlds. I think NWN2, the reason why I did pick NWN2 was that it's something that we don't have to be constrained by MMO mechanics, right? And a lot of us bring our ideas of MMO mechanics. I just want to underline a point here that I made yesterday. This is not an MMO that we're doing up here. This is a remediation of Spencer. We've talked about some of the overarching purposes that we want to achieve. And then I want to ask everybody to report in on the status of your groups to find out where we're at in terms of the integration process. But the key thing is that this platform is more akin to the fantasy role-playing space, where you are going to be constrained by the visual elements, by the library of things. I think Jeff, in particular, Jeff, you were looking for an item, right? A shield that you can modify. I remember you were...
Yeah.
Right. You were looking for Red Cross's shield, right?
Yeah, I was looking for different types of shields and helmets, especially. But I couldn't find them.
There's certain prefab restrictions. I mean, there's certain restrictions. Unless you have great 3D sculpting ability, you're not going to be able to come. But by and large, we're not constrained with the same conventions of an MMO. So I was very much interested, as we continue with our game design discussion, that you're dealing with two different groups of players when you're designing for your audience. Based upon this discussion here, the point I wanted to make was there's half of you are interested in game mechanics and gameplay. The other are more open to participating in the game medium and the storyline. So just bear that in mind as we finish up our last part of our journey here together.
Excellent. No, I'm ready to go.
But we don't have control over the game mechanics and how the functions in the game work. It's already in the...
That's correct. The D&D rule set.
Yeah.
But I will offer you, for example, if you take the out-of-the-box death sequence, Will, if you were to open up a module, put a Balrog next to you, and then fight it, you're going to die, probably. And then you're going to res, except for Chris. Chris will never die. Then you're going to res right there on that spot. And then you're going to die again. You're going to res. And what I've done with the death rules, for example, you can change the mechanics of the rule set entirely, because every piece of code Obsidian has exposed to the users. So I changed the death rule that if you die, you actually get knocked out at zero. You die when you hit -10. At the point you cross that -10 threshold, that's when you've actually died, and that's when we're transported back to Edward Spencer's study.
So you know how to do it. I don't know how to.
Well, there's a difference between making the statement that we can't do it versus it's a great deal of effort and certain specialized knowledge to do it.
Yeah.
I just want to be clear that we can do it. In this case, it's very extensible, but it's only extensible to a point, because to your point, it's based upon a Dungeons & Dragons rule set. But I think we don't have to be constrained in our thinking to think this has to be of the same game mechanics of an MMORPG. Now, do you have anything you want to say on that?
No.
I'd like to hear where everybody's at. Professor, if you could move up the list and page one, and if we could go back and find out from the top to the bottom there, who do we got?
Seth. In fact, it'd be great if we could, if people have stuff they'd like to show us.
Anything you'd like to show or share?
Anything you want to show, Seth?
Well, yeah, we have our characters.
You've got yours in the
note. Okay.
You've got your... you have that here?
It takes me a long time to find it. I got to go through, system files to get to my own stuff. So
you want to try to pull it up and out?
Good. I could do it.
Let me take a
shot at it. I need a functioning.
I did.
Professor, are you going to get them situated up here at the top? What I was going to do is take Greg has developed castle. You developed the Castle Joyous plane area, and I'm going to import that and see if we can get this
function. I don't know. Every time, I already restarted it. Every time I click on a character, it does
that. That's like this.
Oh, thank you.
Did you restart your computer?
Yeah. I think it's plus whatever the highest number is, maybe plus 20.
That's
just gonna penetrate.
That's just penetration.
Yeah, no,
I can't try it.
Hit it four again first.
I made a little. It's a little. I've done this before. I don't know how to say it. Do y'all want to split a conversation?
You told me how to do it last
time.
Can you go first?
If you guys are ready and you can pop up while Seth and everybody's getting, unless you guys are situated and ready to roll.
Yeah, so we're just trying to get
it. So I don't know what you guys have been doing.
First of all, what do you press right. to get the.
No B.
No B, be all right.
Which one is
So, Greg, where'd you put this at?
I just sent it in on the Dropbox. Yeah.
Some of my fills were requirements.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think I feel surprised.
There it is. There you go. You've been up all this time with that. Probably, okay, yeah. Go ahead, Seth. Jeff, this is in the Neverwinter Nights 2 tool set, if you're familiar.
All right, guys, let's everybody pay some attention up the front of the room for Seth.
All right. Well, I pressed one button, which kind of messed up my UI. But here's the character this is Red Cross so far. We were having trouble finding a shield that we could put a cross on. Like, we went through every single shield possible. And that's really the closest we got. So.
Showtime.
Well, the problem is the UI is messed up, and I can't.
You can rotate, can't you? Just click the middle mouse button.
I don't have the middle mouse button.
Oh, if both of them down at the same time and give it a little spin.
I'm doing it there. So I can't figure out how to. I have to have a mouse.
Well, click the character, hold shift, and right click and spin him.
Good appearance with
shift, right click,
and shift, right click, and then spin him.
Okay. There you go.
Spin me.
Look at that. So this is a Red Cross Knight.
So, yeah.
So what should that shield really look like?
It should be white with a big red cross on it.
It should be a white shield with a red cross that basically takes up the whole shield. Now, if we were making a hat pack, you could get a graphics program, create your own shield, put it in, and then people who wanted to play the game could download it. So this is as close as Seth would come to.
Which is a pretty good approximation. That looks really nice.
Yeah.
So his skin's a little bit off. And stuff.
Tell us about some of the attributes.
When we used the dragon armor, red dragon armor. That was the closest thing we could get to anything. Because if you select an armor, you can't just change the color willfully. It selects which color to change based on which color you select. So we decided to get with something that was already red.
Well, we did dragon armor because I think it kills a dragon. I booked one. I think that's at the end of the story, a dragon sent to kill him something. It kills him, so that's another illusion.
Based on St. George and the Dragon Slayer. Red Cross is an allegory for St. George.
St. George.
Exactly, same story. Mm-hmm. Good. Have you begun thinking about any dialogue?
Somewhat of a conversation.
You have a conversation?
Access that. I'm still figuring out the UI. How do I go to my conversation?
Okay, I'm not sure what you did with your tab there.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the UI. You press like Alt F4 or Function F4.
Whatever you did, you lost the tab there to the top. So go to File, Open. Should be Conversation. Is that your conversation?
That is.
But when is this conversation?
It's movie clips.
So should I save? No.
No.
And then there's Plane, and then my conversation is somewhere.
Oh, hey, it's. Go down to the bottom of where it says plane.
Yeah.
You see that little line? Click the nice one. The one
that script.
The left. There's a conversation.
Okay.
There you go.
It's about two of them.
So what you want to do is move out a little bit. See like these areas where you have right here. Drag this over here so you can widen it up. You're constrained on your technical real estate.
There it is. You go up to him and says, "Hello, young traveler, how are you doing?"
Louder, louder.
"Hello, young traveler, how are you doing?" "I'm doing great." I'm doing
your partner.
The player says, "I'm doing great," and you. And he goes, "Well, tell the truth, how this gory wound that was inflicted, that was inflicted in my fight with the six guards outside." And then one choice is, "Oh, is there anything I can do?" And the other one is, "Oh, that's nice, see ya." So,
I like it.
So this is like the beginning of a quest, which we were gonna have them like, could you gather some salves for us? And and then if you do, that's not Sia, you lose chassis points. But yeah, that was the beginning of a conversation.
Excellent. Yes, that's right out of Spencer.
Did we finalize that we're going to do a chastity point system thing?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we already have done that.
So I need to fix that.
So if I put change alignment,
and you say like plus 5 chassis from
that just does alignment. That's not a faction.
Oh, it's a
okay,
faction.
Let's take care of hang out. Who's going next? Daniel and Peter.
I'm ready whenever.
Sure. Here you go. They're eager. So next, the group after them, be sure you're ready to go, so we don't have much time exchanging cards.
And then Spud is going to show us a tour of the Castle Joyous plane whenever we're ready.
Oh, really?
He's ever put it into our module, and he's ready to walk us through that one.
What's down there?
Where are we going to right now?
Huh, okay. I don't really...
Just expand it.
Have my... I didn't have it on my screen.
There you go.
So
that should have it right here. Looks good.
They had it here now. Okay. Okay.
Does everybody show the courtesy of attending to Mr. Park here?
Okay, we had to break it up to do area transitions since that was like too big and it was taking forever to load.
Like 10 minutes to load.
Yeah, so there's just the library as an area itself. Here is the upstairs. The little character on the right, this is Bryn Mawr here. She's got her spear, she's got a little holy light coming out, she's got a face mask, can't tell she's a girl. And then that's my character that's gonna go in.
Minus her breath.
That's going in the conference room.
In the conference room right there.
Yeah, that's a little busty.
You can't really
change that. You just can't change that.
What?
There's
Bryn Mawr?
Nothing we can do.
You can't change the
You
can make her a guy.
Well, I mean, she just could have massive pectoral muscles. Maybe she benches like a half a ton. I don't know.
Okay. But it's good to know it's not just 18-year-old boys' fantasy here.
Okay, here's
this
like
built into the game mechanics.
Which area is this?
This would be the dining room.
This is the chow hall you were talking about yesterday.
Yeah, this is like the proper dining room. Up here is gonna be like a band. It's gonna finish that.
So this isn't. You said it's a proper dining room. So it's not where the guards and guys eat.
Not where the servants eat.
Okay.
This is Malakas's table. Her 6 guards on either side, and her in the middle.
What are the names of the knights again?
I thought someone else was doing the knights. That's I didn't awesome. Want to.
Right.
You guys
so
Max has got the knights.
The question is, are you going to delete those 6 out when you get the...
Oh, these aren't. These are just waiters. Waiters that are going to be walking around. Waiters and waitresses.
That's why you asked me the question about the waypoints. You
yeah.
Been gambling about.
And then here are barmaids.
Never knew Spencer could be so good, huh?
They are busty intentionally.
Yeah, that was definitely intentionally. Here's like Malakas's little private distillery.
But let me ask you a question: Is are busty barmaids appropriate to Castle Joyous context?
Oh hell yeah!
Oh yeah!
Everybody in agreement?
Yeah,
yep.
Sure. There's a lot of talking.
Except for Ted.
Oh no!
Okay, Ted.
Ted's in the program.
Remember though, you know, let's not restrict ourselves solely to busty barmaids. Lots of sensual pleasures need to be in there.
Oh.
Music, art.
We have a library.
Library.
We got the...
Okay,
we're getting there.
The real pleasure.
The real pleasure.
Here's the distillery.
The distillery.
Okay,
that's
some people
over 21. We've got 3 different custom brewed beers right here.
Did you name the
wine?
Casks?
What about
wine? There's 7 casks of wine right here.
Okay. You're
we got hard alcohol.
Where's the
here's the kitchen area.
Show them the dead body.
In the kitchen?
Yeah, well, it ended up in the meat somehow. This is our head chef. Our head chef, he's an Oompa Loompa. These are our sous chefs over here manning the cauldron. This guy's got a rope just in case one of his buddies falls in. Here's the meat pile, but there happens to be a little... I don't know what
this
is. A
little extra something.
Something else in the meat here.
All right, we're not remediating Upton Sinclair's The Jungle here.
I love that.
Oompa Loompa slaving away.
Stalactites in the bowl.
Yeah. Man, here's the storeroom. It's got a bunch of crates in it, but lo and behold, there's something lurking in the back.
It's a lobster. It's a lobster.
It's a lobster. It's an overgrown lobster. It did not want to go in with that dead body.
He's not going easy, is he? Looks delicious, though.
So awesome. Stay out of the storeroom.
Yeah.
Gotta get some big rubber bands.
That
should be in the treasure room. Giant rubber bands. You can go slay the lobster with you.
And that pretty much covers it.
Thank you, thank you.
Guys, great work. Thank
good
you.
Work. So that's only one floor. We don't have our upstairs bedroom.
Okay,
floor?
This is upstairs. It's kind of empty at the moment. This is the mage's lab.
And what about the secret passageways? Have they been deleted out now?
No, I need to close one of these real quick so I can open the main floor. You can only have three areas open up at the same time. Unfortunately. Yeah, but the main floor is slowly getting broken down into separate areas because just the load time is ridiculously long.
Bigger those maps harder will be load.
Including our massive plane in front of
the exterior, as long as there's not too much going on, it'll be fine. It's these interior walls that really start to kill you.
Okay, this is like the entrance hall. When you first come in, it's golden. And the secret passageway hasn't really been made yet, but it's still here. There's that famous secretive door.
So you just walk through it?
You can click on it, and it'll like, I think it slides, or maybe it swings.
Do you like click on one certain book and it does that? That would be cool.
Nah, I don't think
you click on the bookcase.
There's nothing we can do.
No cemento.
Yeah.
Okay. So we need to move on to our next person. Who's ready? You're all set?
I'm good.
Would you pass the cord?
Nice work, guys.
Very nice.
Right. Now let's get the people who actually didn't work on their stuff.
Wait, is this already plugged in?
So you're already good.
You're already good. So you show us yours.
Yeah, I get it up.
Is that you?
Alright, this is Greg's going to show us the Castle Joyous plane that we went through yesterday, last class session. Which I believe should closely approximate this fear in some regard, or he'll describe whatever variants he did around.
Show Jeff where it is up on the city.
Jeff, so show Jeff where this actually is.
Right here, 24th and the desk.
And Jeff, there's the scheme.
Right. That's a design element.
Which the students made.
This is Greg's conception of that.
Now, we had put the waypoint down here, more to the right of the screen. So I just put the path trailing from there. It's not on the left like there. And I did what everyone was talking about with the village here. Yeah, I was thinking about calling it like a... you know, as like an antithesis to Castle Joyous, I was thinking about like calling it like Village Miserable or something. We got like the signs here to direct people to either way. So you know, it's pretty nice rural village. Got all the amenities of
where are the girls?
Yeah, they need to be maids first. For Lander.
And I put a whole big wheat field here. Wheat was the only crop I found.
They have corn.
They have corn too.
Yeah.
I found wheat, so we're sticking to wheat.
Well, you need that for the beer, right?
Exactly.
For the story.
And I got all these waypoints or the spawn points here. I actually didn't know how to code it.
Okay,
but
what do you want there?
We could put. We could discuss that. Rats, or. I think they need to fight stuff in the field.
So you fight the farmers?
They're giant bunny rabbits.
Zombie farmers.
Giant rats.
Snakes are eating the
giant
rats.
Bunny rabbits.
Giant bunny rabbits.
Yes.
The zombie farmers.
Zombie farmers.
Remember, we are remediating Spencer.
Zombie.
I think that was pretty much in Canto 4, if I remember correctly. Stanza 7.
My favorite.
Giant rats.
You love
line 3.5.
And then just I did a little stuff around the Castle Joyous itself. I put the moat in, textured it with mud so it would look nice once it had water in it, but I didn't know how to do that. And then I was thinking about putting flowers here, all around Castle Joyous, because that would be more like sensual pleasure with the smell and the sight. So I'm thinking about putting just a whole bunch of flowers all around the entrance to here. But other than that, this is pretty much the Castle Joyous Plains that I have.
Very nice.
Put on water.
Questions or comments or editorial disagreement?
It would just
with
be like
monkey's decisions
like
there.
Normal.
I mean, we have to redone.
Mr. Shearer thinks that he wants to totally reject your work, Greg.
Is that right?
No.
I think this is a personal combat moment.
Oh,
that's
God.
Good. Well done.
Greg, if you're going to back me up, I'll
everywhere.
Back you up.
Why, thank you.
Okay.
Well,
let's. You all set,
nice
Tim?
Yeah. Well, he's got the, our character. He's going to do it. I have a sort of a quest line, I guess, I'm just talking about.
Let's just see if this is. Okay, now you're going to have to toggle your screen.
Is it Control F12?
Function F8.
Function F8.
On most computers, it seems to be function F8. Sometimes you have to hit it twice.
If you hold it down, it'll like go to a little cool menu, like Alt Tab does.
Switch seats.
Are we on the right channel?
Not so far.
Oh. Well, wait, you don't know yet because you're not on the right channel. But if your screen like blanked out.
Before we get our actual character up, I guess I'll talk. We've sort of got a tentative quest line for Timaeus, but we're gonna have to go back and make it so you can have like, the good side and the bad side of the chase and unchase. But we have five quests that have to do with him. First one, you get triggered by Arthur. You see him and he says, "Have you seen my squire?" And sends you off on a goose chase. You then find him when he's wounded from the sneak attack. And I guess here we have something that can like help me help or not. But as of now, we have to help him. And he says he saw a house and sends you off to Belphoebe's house. You then meet Belphoebe, who sends you to get something to like some kind of ingredients and says, like, come back to the house when you found them. You come back, her and Timaeus are now, her and Timaeus are going to be there. And then the fourth one is you come back to the house. Oh, sorry. I get a little confused when I don't look at it. Belphoebe's not there when you get there. And Timaeus is and says, like, I've fallen in love with this woman, because that's what happens. He says, go find her and give her these roses that I have. Go and find her. And she gives you her story about how she's, like, chased and, like, that can't happen, and sends you back to tell Timaeus. And when you tell Timaeus, he runs off in, you know, distraught state, and that's the end of the quest line. So we got to twist it around to make it so you can have, like, chase and unchase points. We can really do that.
But yeah, but it still fits into the plot of the story.
Yeah.
I didn't hear what you said there.
It still fits into the whole plot.
It does.
And it gives some narrative element at the end there when you have to hear about Phoebe's story.
Well, there's something you guys were trying to show the group on the display
here.
Yeah,
trying to get that up.
Hmm.
Jonathan's PC. Okay.
Yeah. And it's yours plugged in, too?
Yeah.
So I think it seems to just
never really
clicked out.
Described as far as speaking of old.
Because it's on two now.
Okay, who's on two?
They're on two.
So
this is old, not young.
Yeah, then we look at that.
We got him explained it as young. Okay, we'll have to judge
that.
I thought he was like a kid. But no.
Okay.
We looked through it. There's not a lot about
this. Yeah, it's not. Yours isn't making the transition for some reason. It's not externalizing that is.
You gotta click on first.
Okay, so is Jeff trying to.
I think it's a problem with the.
I was plugged in. Did you?
Right,
so
I think it's just. I think we're having one of these famous.
One of our moments.
Equipment failures.
There, wait, stop.
Ah.
Somebody with.
Sunfish.
There you go.
Starfish?
Whose computer is that?
That's mine.
Okay.
It's
But that's not what's on his computer. Right?
That's because he's got SLI running and he's running a different space, so he may it's probably detecting it as a second.
I designed this is a Keon. That's the front starfish right there. And there's Brutamar. I decided to take the Fairy Queen to an undersea narrative.
It's called Under the Sea, is the theme song.
I think it improves the okay.
King Triton's back then.
Mine? I don't know why that's not loading.
Your machine's up there. What I want you to do, let me have it for a second.
All you.
Let's
see if this will find it.
Cool.
You're doing what we call SLI, which is you've got multiple displays is what it's detecting. I don't know what's going on with your...
My area won't lose.
Your area.
I was just playing with the conversation trying to get that to work. You just, okay.
I'm a little dandy as the progress we've made. Give it.
Okay, so you just gotta come off of this screen onto this screen. That's pretty cool.
We need to do that.
And for some reason it won't load. We've got this Guillaume man just standing in a field.
And you probably just do new area if you want, and then place it down.
Or you can just go to Appearance Wizard if you want to freeze your computer.
Yeah.
That's
a fatal exception error.
Well, maybe you should fix your computer. You're just, let me see what you're trying to do. You're trying to show us what you've done for Guillaume, right?
Yeah.
Do what Chris said, create a new area, file new area, doesn't matter, an exterior, file new area.
Next.
Is there something wrong with what I said?
Yeah.
Yes. See if you can double click in there. Still not going?
I think it's because, I don't know, I got two screens going here.
No, it wouldn't have too much to do with it, so.
Click go to start, man.
Good, here, I know what you can do.
Do what?
To your right, click go to start.
Go to start.
Go
to start.
No, down, left, stop. Yeah. Okay.
All right, just go to where you're going with the creatures and show us Guillaume, see if you can pull them up with the preview. Otherwise, you're just going to have to tell us about it, and we'll take a look at everything on Tuesday.
It looked pretty nice,
Thank you. I actually don't know how to do it.
Let's do properties, new window.
The properties
hold on, my property's over here. Yeah, I got it.
Right.
There you go.
No, just make it real big too.
What's happening is his second monitor situation is he's not rendering the 3D over here. Let's go on to the next ready group, and I'll try to sort him out separately.
You want me to explain the quest?
Yes, explain the quest.
They're in my notebook. I know that they're there. I have a conversation that I can just tell you. Guillaume, we're not sure. I mean, both of them work. Where we place them. Some people are thinking maybe we have them in Guillaume and Arthur in the forest. When we meet them on the plains, doesn't really matter. For the first one, Guillaume's sitting down, slightly injured, and he says, I have fallen victim to my squire's husbandry. And he's telling about how he fell off his horse. And he sends you to get pungent elderberries or whatever. Or he sends you someone and tells you to ask him for elderberries. And along the way, they're clickable things that give you what he asks for. But you bring those back to him, and you fail the quest because he tries to heal himself with the elderberries, and it doesn't work. And you actually go to the guy he tells you to, and you're chased, and you show temperance, like the Knight of Temperance.
So we're continuing with this chastity, pursuing chastity with
you. And then you go to the guy that he tells you to go to, which is kind of farther away and harder to get to, and he actually gives you hemorrhoid cream, which you take back to Guillaume.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then you turn in
so
the
now
that's
your remediation experiment, Professor. We've introduced hemorrhoid cream in the dispenser.
I think that was in Canto 32, stanza 14, line 3.5.
Seth has a rival in terms of intimate game knowledge. Yes.
I just thought
let's
funny.
Take a look at the model that you did, Jeff.
Yeah, there's Guillaume.
Okay, this is Guillaume. I guess my test would probably the best way.
Yeah, he does look banned.
Probably not.
Like that conservative tempered arm.
Yeah, or maybe daytime isn't either. But
that's much better.
You got Guillaume here. He has the limited armor that we could
do. Yeah, we're a little frustrated with
the
shields.
Shields, nice. Shields and the helmet's all right. Design a sword. I could do that. But there he is. He's got some armor.
Can you make that sword like 4 times as big?
I think you can, actually.
I can try.
Okay, we're running very short on time here. So was there any... Who else needed to show? Max, did you have something? We got Peter and Daniel.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
take yours on. I think
you're on battery problems? Or?
Yeah, it's done. I don't know if anybody... but I'll have the
Mike
farm.
The farm?
Yeah, and we also have the knights, and they'll just basically be sort of an intro dialogue.
We need to design, like, the instance with the knights, like, how we're going to work with that.
There's not really going to be a choice for
an encounter when you first try to cross this ridge.
Right.
And all the six knights will come at you and be like, yo, we got too low.
I'll give you a hint on that. Did you guys hear the encounter that our six knight group's going to do? When you cross a bridge, they're going to have those six knights approach you. And the way you do that is an event trigger and a waypoint. The waypoint there at the place where you want to be approached, near the event trigger. So when they cross that line, it will fire an event, which will cause the knights to walk to the event trigger.
They don't just pop up, though. They come. You need to place them first.
Yeah, place them first. And then,
place them in the bushes for him.
Have them jump from the castle.
Okay, guys, let's listen up in our last mode. Daniel and Peter are going to chat with us here.
Here's Malacasta.
Speak up, please.
Thanks to his efforts, we have a pretty
Malacasta. Which, for some reason, my computer thinks it's gone huge now.
Now it's
spinning around, but yes. It's kind of hard to see.
Does she have wings or is that a detached cloak?
It's a cloak. For some reason, it kind of like
doesn't
really move with her.
I don't know. Once you get in the game, it does.
Change in game?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
We have her actually statted out as a level 3 sorceress, so if you do want to fight Malacasta, she probably won't be that hard, but she can give you a run for your money.
Pretty much like
that. She has some charisma boosting and some charm persons and, you know, things that Malacasta should probably have.
So you invite her with the rule set that more represents Malacasta character. Professor Clayton, did you hear that?
I did not. I was attending to South.
I think you might want to hear Peter's statement. It's very important to Spencer remediation.
She has some charm persons and eagle splendors and things that should... I mean, she also has a magic missile, but, you know, you have to get a sorcerer's magic missile.
Everyone
needs a magic.
Right. And then... in our end game, she's going to morph into a boss.
Maybe. Doesn't really need a boss.
Maybe.
Brittamont's going to tear her apart. Brittamont's a level 10 paladin and a level 5 divine champion. So.
Okay. Anybody else need to talk? We'll give a report on there. Do we miss anybody in this conversation? We're nigh on time.
I got a question for Max. Max, did you say you've created a farm?
Yeah, I'm still working on it.
And how will that work with the existing set of outbuildings that...
Well, you could just integrate it right in, Caden.
I could integrate it right in, or I could put it on the map
town,
inside.
Sort of near the rural town.
You can copy paste all the objects.
Okay, Village Miserable will not conflict with farm maps.
Is there any limitations to the size? Because right now it's... small and medium.
It's okay. What I'll probably do for where we're at right now is I'm going to make that a map off to the west. Because you've got it in the northwest, so I'll extend Village Miserable off one map and you can just transition out to that.
That's right.
So real quick, two
size.
Things. Sorry.
Okay.
You can be any size.
Okay. Real quick, on Tuesday, a couple things going to happen. You don't want to participate in this, don't have to. You're going to be introduced to the concept of intergenerational transfer. This is your fiduciary to the next generation who inherit the state of the Fairy Queen Online from where we left it.
Better not muck it up.
But here's what your opportunity is. You've got some design principles and some ideas. You need to figure out who's going to be a spokesperson. And Matt Sheldon, this is your moment to shine.
I get to talk?
You get to talk and be on video. We're going to video.
Oh.
So I would suggest that I would nominate Matt Shelton to his passion for the cinema to be our collective spokesperson and have each of you, Matt will be the major MC, to just talk through all of our design principles. We're going to spend 10 to 15 minutes, so it's going to be very extemporaneous and impromptu. And the question you have to think about, what do you want the next generation of the class to know about your assumptions for the remediation of Edward Spencer? And in each group, am I representing this accurately for you?
Mm-hmm.
So that will be on YouTube. That'll be out there, very visible. So if you don't want to participate, you're worried that your soul is getting captured by the video camera or something, we can set you off to the side.
Can we get this on IMDb?
Exactly.
So I think that the fact that we're only going to have 15 minutes for filming means that each of your groups need to talk ahead of time, just as you've been working together on your characters and your farms and all the stuff you're making, and decide what your group is going to say. It needs to be 1 to 3 sentences, and you need to have it in mind so that you deliver it forcefully clearly right away, not, do you want to take this one? You know, not a lot of fumbling around.
These are one-take moments, guys.
And we're going to, clearly, we're going to want to work through these maps here and just explain, you know, not every one of them, but the key ones to explain these principles that went along with these major map designs and your characters and what you want people to know, because they're going to be able to change your characters if they don't like it. They're going to be able to change your maps if they don't like it. So you want to be persuasive.
I think you can change it. I think you made it so you can lock your characters and see if I can do that.
Okay.
Microsoft Live Spaces is the preferred way to transfer this to me.
Microsoft Live.
Can I email it to you?
No.
Wait, not
Windows.
No. If you want to get it into the game, that may not be a good idea.
Can't you get Microsoft Live?
Yeah.